Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Gavin McLaughlin with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. And we're joined now by Adrian Weckler, who is technology editor at the Irish Independent. Adrian, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Gavin.
In April, Bitcoin was at one stage $63,000 a pop. Now it's just under half that. So what gives?
What gives is a bunch of regulators and a crackdown in China have essentially put the kibosh on the soaring heights that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies had reached earlier this year. Now, you're still up. If you bought this time last year, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are by and large still worth more than they were 12 months ago, but not 100% more or 150% more. The biggest single agent is China, which essentially has said that you can't mine Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies in China anymore. It's strongly discouraging at mining. Just for those who aren't aware, the way that Bitcoin comes into existence, because it is a digital currency, is that a bunch of computers have to crack a really difficult puzzle, and it's a race, and whoever cracks that puzzle in the quickest amount of time gets rewarded with the Bitcoin, but it takes a huge amount of computing power and thus a huge amount of electricity. So typically the countries that have been doing most of this in the last couple of years are countries like China and Iran, now Kazakhstan, countries that have a lot of very, very cheap electricity or their authoritarian regimes. They don't have to worry too much about the cost of that. So we've seen also a little bit of a crackdown from regulators in Europe on individual cryptocurrency platforms in the UK and in Italy, for example. They're telling some of the more popular crypto exchanges that they either don't have a license or they got their eye on them. So it's a combination of things.
Yeah, the energy thing is very interesting, and it does seem that China has kind of got sick of all this energy being expended on this thing. And it's also been quite interesting, Adrian, to see them basically telling banks there and financial services companies, look, you can no longer provide any services related to cryptocurrencies to clients. So, I mean, it really is a very severe crackdown. It seems part of the reason for this is they're looking at doing their own version of Bitcoin, which other countries and indeed the European Central Bank are looking at doing as well.
Yeah, that's right. So both China and the European Union are both looking at introducing different but similar types of electronic currencies, a digital euro, which they say would complement cash. And the Chinese are a little bit more serious about it because they can see the way the wind is blowing in the long term with regards to cash. And they also are falling out with the rest of the world for other reasons. So they're not that sure that they want to be part of the same system. China sees itself dominating the world in 20 to 30 years. So it's probably getting ready to do that with its digital currency also. And of course, why would it tolerate the ascendancy of Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of those other cryptocurrencies when it wants to create its own dominant currency? It has a very good record of seizing the mantle on things like this. The last time I was in China, all of the taxis in the city I was in were electric. You could only pay them via your smartphone, which I couldn't do because I wasn't hooked into their system. I had things like Google and Facebook and Twitter, which you're not allowed in China. So when the Chinese decide to do something like this, it's one in five people in the world. It's 20% of the world's population. So that's a very, very serious hit to a cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. It leaves it really as something for the rest of the world, meaning really bits of Asia, the US and Europe.
Yeah, now we get into the future role of Bitcoin in a little bit, but I just want to return to some of the trading difficulties, if you like, that there's been over the last few months. I mean, if we look at trading volume, trading volume at the biggest exchanges is down 40%. Versus the peaks that we saw earlier this year. Now, volumes are still higher than they were last year, but I wonder, is it a sign that maybe this Bitcoin craze, if you like, is a little bit of a fad that's lost some steam?
Well, there are a couple of things going on there. So if you're looking at the factors that fed into the rise in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency prices, you're looking at a huge number of casual new entrants and day traders into the market. And the majority of those are young men. They're the kind of people who would normally be using apps like Betfair, going to Paddy Power, be betting on matches. Anecdotally, many of your listeners might know this. They might know somebody who is dabbling in cryptocurrencies, but the ones who tend to bet the most, and it is a bet after all, because they're looking for very quick gains of, you know, hundreds or even thousands of euro, they tend to be young men. Now, what happens when there's an initial shock to the market and it starts falling in price by 15, 20, 25%? Most of the enthusiasm drains quickly from the soft side of the market. Obviously, there are still people there who see it as an opportunity. And you and I will both have seen people who are, you know, loudly proclaiming on social media that now is the time to make a killing because Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin is falling. But by and large, the bulk of the casual day trading market, young men for the most part, they go quiet, or they stop using their Revolut apps, for example, to trade Bitcoin.
Let's go back to first principles, Adrian, when Bitcoin was invented by its mysterious inventor, Satoshi Nakamoto.
Mm-hmm. What, it's not me, by the way.
Not you. I bet you wish it was you, because good old Satoshi seems to have a lot of Bitcoins to his name, which if you ever cash them in, probably worth a lot of money. But what was the point? I mean, what is it supposed to be? What is it supposed to do?
It depends who you ask. It's true believers who call themselves hodlers, not holders, but hodlers. They have different interpretations of the long-term significance of Bitcoin in particular, and they believe that it is an alternative form of security to what they regard as, you know, wobbly, shaky, weak, corrupt national and international governments and systems. They witheringly refer to fiat currencies, meaning the dollar and the euro and sterling. So they see this as a kind of, it's a strange kind of a mix of counterculture and rebellion and, you know, throw a dash of QAnon and whatever you're having yourself in there. They see themselves as, you know, having latched on to something that doesn't depend on what a central banker or a politician says. And to be honest, in a way, that is a large part of why it probably will be around in 5 or 10 or 15 years' time, because those people are true believers, and there are quite a few of them, and they're not going to sell.
Yeah, they see it as the basis maybe of a payment system that's outside the global financial system we have at the moment. And I mean, let's be clear, Adrian, because this kind of gets obscured by all the noise around it. The technology is really amazing, and it does have the potential to be revolutionary, and I suppose the key thing really is this, as far as I can see it, if I were to send you money, Adrian, in sort of the normal way, there has to be a bank and indeed a central bank in the middle to sort of verify that what I'm sending you is real money. But Bitcoin has that capability built into the software, so people can make these digital purchases without a bank account and without a fear that they're sort of being scammed with counterfeit money.
That's right. There are fewer middlemen involved. There are fewer ways to get ripped off. If you know what you're doing, it is a much purer form of transaction. And that is one of the huge attractions to it. Of course, when we talk about this as a currency, that's a real misnomer. The last significant calculation I saw was that there's well under 2% of what is, you know, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are used for is anything to do with paying for something. There's very few things you can actually buy or sell using Bitcoin. Although I see that big auction houses have now gotten into the game. I think Sotheby's has decided that the $15 million price tag they're putting on that giant pear-shaped diamond that's going for sale, they will accept Bitcoin for that. But other than that, and things like, NFT pieces of art and stuff, there's very little you can buy. But if you want a safe transaction, you're absolutely right. If you know what you're doing, it is generally one of the safest way you can transfer money.
Yeah, but if little of it is actually being used for transactions, it does raise this question about what is the ultimate role of it going to be. I mean, for example, people were talking about it being sort of a digital gold, that it was an inflation hedge. But then when you see this rising inflation that we have and Bitcoin pretty flat since the end of May, I mean, it's not doing much for you if you have it as an inflation hedge.
Yeah, well, if you pick your time frame, it's not doing much for you since the end of May. If you're looking at it, if you had invested in December and cashed out at the end of March, you would have doubled your money pretty much. So it depends on your time frame. As to what its true role and purpose is, like, one of the other big narratives around it is that it's a criminal's dream, and because it's used so much in the dark web, on the black market, it's a cold form of wealth transfer. Just give somebody a USB key and you could be paying them off. In my experience reporting on it, that is true, but it's slightly overdone. The amount that is estimated to go through the black market, or not the black market, but through criminality, is probably over-egged a little bit. Mostly it's simply used by people who are trying to, as you say, hedge against inflation, hedge against low interest rates, people who want to put their money somewhere. They're using it as a rival to gold.
Yeah, but if we look sort of 5-10 years down the road, it does seem to me it'll kind of continue to be basically what it is at the moment. I mean, any idea that it would be sort of widely used as a method of payment, I mean, it's clearly going to be displaced, I think, by national central bank digital currencies. If you ask me, it'll sort of remain as a sort of a speculative asset or a means of payment, for criminals or you know, countercultural people who are willing to accept it as payment and then go and spend it on something else.
Yeah. I mean, there are different views on that. If you look at, for example, banks like the Bank of New York, BNY Mellon, which just set up a crypto hub in Dublin, led by a lot of people who were part of the Ethereum-backed crypto company Consensus, there are actually quite a few big banks who are not just holding seminars on the value of blockchain and what crypto might mean in our future, but who are actually moving and hiring people to create sections of their businesses that essentially deal in cryptocurrency assets and futures. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of stockbrokers in Dublin, and they don't advise their clients to get into crypto because it's too volatile a market, but they have increasing calls from their clients to get involved in that. And, if you look at the market cap for, says something like Bitcoin, for example, it was over $1 trillion about 6 weeks ago. It's fallen well below that now. But, you know, gold, I think the market cap on that is around 10 or 11 trillion euro or dollars. Bitcoin itself is now, you know, almost 10% of that within just 8 or 9 years. I've seen estimates from respectable people suggesting that a mid to long term price target is somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000. Now, I should absolutely clarify that there are at least as many people, respectable people and senior people, who say that it's all a fraud and a pyramid scheme. And, you know, people like Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan who say, no, listen, you're all buying a pig in a poke here. And if you don't understand it, then don't buy it. So just to be clear about that. But I suppose the point is, it has stood the test of time through years and years of us saying that this could collapse with any central banker's wag of the finger. And it's still there.
It still is with us indeed. And I suspect we're going to be spending a lot more time talking about it over the years to come. Adrian Weckler, technology editor at the Irish Independent, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Gavin.
Taking stock on Newstalk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.